This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Got a full show for you today. We're going to start out talking baseball. Detroit Tigers baseball with our good friend Lynn Henning. And let's bring in Lynn. Lynn, how you doing, buddy? Hey, Lynn, how you doing?
Hi, Earl. Pretty good, thank you.
Okay. Hey, wanted to talk to you today because, you know, we're almost through a quarter of the season, and the Tigers are 18-18. What are the problems you see the Tigers having, or do you think this is something they can start to winning, or do they have some significant problems at this point?
Well, I guess with this team, Earl, significant problems consists of being .500. And that's a pretty good problem probably for a team to have through the first 36 or 7 games. And I do think their problems are fairly relative in that regard, primarily because the bats really haven't awakened. Now, yesterday, I think you saw something pretty significant.
Yes.
And it's also not unexpected. It was 83 degrees yesterday here in Chicago. I'm just on my way back now from that series. And I don't think it was coincidental that you saw three guys hit three home runs of 400 feet plus. It just sometimes takes a little warmer weather to get good hitters going, and I think that was a factor and will be a factor here the remainder of the way. I think that what we've seen is a good team trying to get its sea legs, and even with all the struggles, really, to come out of this thing break even is not half bad. Now, they still have some issues, but there aren't many teams that don't have issues, and I think you'll see better baseball now, Earl.
Okay, well, that's certainly good. I know that's what Tiger fans want to hear. What about the pitching, Lynn? You know, the Papa Grande just hasn't been the pitcher that he was last year, and I guess no one should have expected it, but, you know, he hasn't struggled a whole lot, but that has to be unnerving that the closer they had that was so good last year hasn't been as good this year.
Now, because bullpens are so difficult to predict and project, I thought their bullpen could really be a problem this year, at least a problem compared with last year when they were flawless. And, pardon me, statistics and probabilities told you that that would be a case. With him, I don't know. I really don't know, Earl. I think he's probably going to be okay. But remember, he just turned 34. Benoit is 35. Dochel is 38. I really did think that age could be one of their complications in that bullpen. But they have younger arms that are about ready to pull up. Pardon me here this afternoon. Luis Marte, Brian Villarreal, and Al Albuquerque will be coming back probably in early July. He's on a pretty good path. And that suddenly gives you another couple of options there. But Valverde is the key. They've got to have a reliable closer, and we'll see if he settles down. Yesterday now he was throwing back more in the 95-96 range, which is really where he needs to live. And it's just a matter of having that roulette wheel called bullpens coming up in your favor. But the percentages would suggest they'll probably be okay there.
Okay. Hey, Lynn, I know at the beginning of the year we talked about the bench. Has the bench been a problem, or how has the bench fared? I know second base hasn't been strong, but how's the overall, how's the bench performed so far?
Well, they've got good players on that 25-man roster, and I think really one of the good things that Leland does is he deploys everybody. He tends to use his people and use them regularly, and I believe you need to do that. There are folks who want always the best people in the lineup every day. You can't really do that in baseball. You're, A, going to burn people out, and, B, you're not going to really, ideally and optimally, use people who've got skills. And that calls for a mixed bag, as most managers would agree, although fans don't always like it.
That's for sure. I hear a lot of complaints about that. They would like them to stick with a lineup and leave it that way. And you're right. You can't do that every day because players would get burned out. You have to give them an adequate amount of rest, even though we know Prince Fielder doesn't like resting. But even he would help him, of course, over the course of this long, long season that baseball is.
Yeah. And also, Turrell, I think people forget, look, just because you go with a set lineup doesn't mean they're all going to be hitting 300.
Right.
You're going to have guys in that set lineup who aren't hitting, and then you've got the same fans who are screaming for the set lineup wondering why Leland doesn't pull somebody and try somebody else. So I take a lot of that flack with a grain of salt. You get it a lot, but I don't think it's terribly rational, in fact, in most cases.
And especially when you look at the division they're in, I mean, it's only them in Cleveland right now. Kansas City and Minnesota don't look like they're going to be a factor at all. I mean, Chicago's starting to come to life a little bit, but other than that, that division really is soft.
Yeah, it is, but I'd be very careful of it. And I thought coming into the season it was being underestimated. Now, you can say right now that certainly isn't the case, and I would agree to a point. But the Kansas City Royals have been playing without their closer, without their starting center fielder, without their starting catcher, and now they had one of their starters just go down to Tommy John surgery. And yet they've beaten the Rangers a couple of games already this week. They've been winning their share of series here of late. That is a dangerous team, and it's going to be tough on the Tigers the rest of the way. I'll guarantee you that. The White Sox, well, you saw how easily they went down in two games here. They didn't. And the Indians can do some damage, too. I don't really think the division is terrible. It's not good. It's not as good as several other divisions in baseball. But that hasn't stopped the St. Louis Cardinals from winning a couple of world championships over the last six seasons when the National League Central was anything but formidable. So it's a matter of taking care of business and then making sure that you've got a team intact as you head into the playoffs. And then that's really what's going to talk here. It's what kind of a team is this going to be heading into September, October?
Okay, give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. We've got a question for you, Jerry from Hazlitt. Jerry, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Earl. Lynn, good to see you, my friend.
I know we've never heard this voice before, Earl, so I right. Can't imagine who it would be.
I'm just in from Ames, Iowa. Earl, I would like to give you an advisory. Could you get somebody on with a little more gravitas? Letters. Quick question, my friend.
Switch on that thing, Earl. But anyway, go ahead, Jerry. What is your question? Assuming you have a question.
Believe me, I'll hear about this exchange later. Very briefly, this whole issue about instant replay, okay, I will tell you up front, full disclosure, I'm in favor of it, of expansion of it, not willy-nilly, but I it seems the only argument against it is either because there's a fear that I get the slippery slope argument from people like Fred Heumann, as sharp a guy as Fred is, who are traditionalists, but I haven't really heard a really substantive argument against incrementally expanding it to cover, a very specific controversial plan. Just wonder what your feeling is on it.
It can be succinctly sized up in this way. You tell me where replay hasn't made for a better game in other sports, to which other people are going to say, well, baseball's different. No, it's not. It's a game, and it's subject to mistakes. Let's limit those mistakes as much as possible so that we've got the integrity of the game here that first and foremost is being valued and not some nonsense called the human factor. So I am all for it. Obviously, you're going to have to figure out the contours and the lines of demarcation as to what you review and what you don't. You can't get into balls and strikes and that kind of business. I don't believe that is reasonable. But on baselines, on plays at first base and so forth, and you're going to have to take into account plays that really can't be replayed. But again, this is not impossible science. You just have to come away with some common sense approach as to where you draw the lines. But
well, usually I get we get a rhetorical question about, well, where is it going to end, or where do you start with that? And my answer to that is usually you start with it the way you started, at every other place. You get some hits together and you figure out what can work, and then you tweak it over time and improve it, like any other technological advance. But it just seems like with HD and replays, I mean, the public is so far ahead of the institution that I think it's going to be embarrassing if they don't get in front of this train. But anyway,
I agree with you, because all laws have an end, Jerry, and we all know that. And you can put very clear boundaries on what you review and what you don't in baseball. They're going to do it, and when they do it, they'll wonder why they didn't do it years ago. But that's baseball.
Exactly.
It's always the caboose on the train. And they've got to get to it. This has gotten absurd, what we're seeing happen during games. And then they pretend there's integrity there. There's not.
I think if you can cut out a five-minute tirade from the manager kicking dirt on the umpire, I would substitute that in the New York Minute for an honest-to-goodness replay. That'll settle the issue. But anyway, thanks for taking the call in, and you too, Earl. Have a good one, guys.
Hey, thank you. Jerry, let's go back to the phones. We've got Michael on the line. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Earl? The Minnesota Vikings have just got done voting for their new football stadium. Also, I just want to know, since if this I was talking to Earl the last time I called about the new stadium that's being built. What you think about the Marlins' new stadium?
I think it's a wonderful testament to technology, and I think it's a bad ballpark. What they did at Comerica and too many other places like Petco, they made it way, 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 way too big. And that's not baseball. There's got to be some equilibrium there between what's fair to hitters and what's fair to pitchers. And what they've got at the new Marlins Park is patently ridiculous and unfair to hitters. They will move those fences in.
Okay.
You can't take the well-hit baseball that comes against a less than well executed pitch and penalize the hitter. And that's what they do down there. And that's what they do to a large extent still at Comerica, even though they've gotten the worst of it repaired when they moved in left field. But Petco is terrible in San Diego. And it just doesn't provide the necessary rhythm to a baseball game, which fundamentally, by the way, is we all agree, the best ballparks are inner ballparks. It's not that you're necessarily making them all hitters' parks. That right field in Fenway is a long way from home.
Sure.
But you provide intimacy, first of all, for the customer, and with as much focus in mind, you try to make it fair to the hitters and to the pitchers. But that ballpark down there is seriously deformed in terms of its outfield distances. That will change, I'll guarantee you.
Do you think now all these retro ballparks, like they based off the Comerica, but the one in Baltimore, do you think by them, when Tampa Bay finally gets around to their new stadium and Oakland, since they are only two markets that left that need of new baseball facilities for the owners, really it's for the owners, do you think they'll start designing them instead of basing them off the model of the in way they designed the ballparks, like being in the neighborhood? What kind of modern ballpark do you like to see?
Sure.
Like the one
what
at Dodger
I think
Stadium?
The mistake was made by the folks at Comerica is they suddenly had all these great examples of really good ballparks where, again, the customer was placed on top of the game. Camden, Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
You had all of these places on top of the fact you had your already in place replicas from the last 100 years, Fenway and Wrigley and Tiger Stadium.
Sure.
So what did they do at Comerica? They went the exact opposite way. They went the exact opposite way at Petco. Mm-hmm. And they did so at the new Marlins ballpark. That's crazy. It just gets away from the very things that people have treasured about those iconic ballparks.
What about the Royal Stadium? Could design a stadium like the Royal Stadium?
Royal Stadium, when it opened in 73, was futuristic with all that terrible artificial turf. You've noticed what they've done.
Yeah.
They've gone back to grass, of course, quite some time ago, but they've also changed their dimensions, too. They played around with them a few times. You don't have to play around with them if you do things right the first time. And yet you don't see these places backing up their fences. It's because they made them unnecessarily and unduly and unfairly distant that you've seen the adjustments. And it's a shame they did that at Comerica Park. So much space has been wasted at Comerica Park, particularly with the sloping back, like, the upper tiers and the seats there.
Would you like to have them built like the one in Minnesota?
I love Target Field. Absolutely Target Field. I like, don't get me wrong about Comerica. I love the location. I love the walkways. But they could have had the perfect ballpark there if they just brought in those upper decks and not put such a ridiculous swept back slope to the lower deck. You have all those people broiling in the sun down there, too, which is not good. But they wasted tons and tons and tons of space. I always kind of just want to put my arms around the place and just pull it in. Just to make it, you know, like a ballpark instead of the monstrosity that it is dimensionally down there. There's so much opportunity was wasted. And yet again, I applaud the location, the venue. The walkways around the ballpark are excellent. So many things were done right. It's just a shame that what could have been a masterpiece, I think, was a wasted opportunity.
Yes, it sort of reminds me of that, though, the old Philadelphia ballpark, mainly, it's so spacious.
Yeah, it just, again, Earl, it wouldn't have taken much.
Yeah.
But people forget also how screwed up that thing was, when it opened. That new fence has been in there a while now. The bullpen that used to be in right field has been over in left field a while. People forget how really messed up that ballpark was. And it's still, some of it isn't fixable, but a lot of it could be if they made a few adjustments that I think over the years will be made.
Okay. Hey, Lynn, I want to thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll get back together and talk a little bit more baseball and some of the parks and everything. We sort of got sidetracked a little bit. But, hey, thank you, and we'll do this again real soon.
Okay, Earl. Sounds good, buddy.
Okay, bye. Thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Lynn Henning from the Detroit News here talking sports with us right here on AM 870. 22 minutes from the after 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870.
Historian Bernard Lewis didn't just study the Middle East. From time to time, he helped shape it. A renowned linguist and scholar, Lewis met with presidents, prime ministers, shahs, kings, senators, and popes. He coined the term clash of civilizations. I'm Neil Conan. Notes on a Century. Historian Bernard Lewis joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The weather forecast is for a sunny day, the high today in the mid-60s. Overnight, our low in the low 40s. It'll be mostly clear. Mostly sunny tomorrow, with a high in the low 70s. Warmer Friday, but mostly cloudy, the high 78. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now let's talk a little football, a little Lions football with our good friend Tony Ortiz, the sideline reporter for the Lions. And I know he knows a lot of things that are going on down there with the Lions. So let's bring in Tony. Tony, how you doing, my friend? Hey, Tony.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, okay. Hey,
how you doing?
Okay, good to hear from you. I know I hadn't talked to you in a while. It's good to get together with you and talk about the Lions. The Lions, as you know, are on an upswing. You know, people are expecting big things from them this year. They got most people back from the past year. So this team has a lot of things going for them right now. They're a young team, and they're sort of bonding together, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and they're coming off that first playoff appearance in a long time this past season. And you're right, they're a team that's on the upswing. They've got a lot of good young players. Matthew Stafford, over 5,000 yards passing. Calvin Johnson's been the talk of the NFL this year with the Madden 13 cover, with the season he's had. You know, this is a team that looks better and better. But this is still a team that has a couple of issues and problems, and the biggest of which, Earl, is at running back. Javid Best only played 6 games last year because of concussion-like symptoms. Kevin Smith was nicked up after they re-signed him. Michael LeSure, back that they're counting on this year, missed the entire season last year with injuries. So this is a team that has to get something out of its running game if they expect to improve.
Yes, no doubt about that. They'll have to because the running game, it could be – I know we all thought it would be one of the stronger parts before going into last season, and yet, it ended up being a weakness. But these guys, if they can live up to the accolades and all the buildup that they've had over the years, it could turn into a strength this year, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could turn into a strength, but they've got to be able to move the ball. And you're right. Mm-hmm. Keeping one of those running backs, Earl, healthy is going to be the key. Another key is going to be consistent play from the offensive line. They seem to get it together, the offensive line did over the second half of the season. And you kind of saw, especially at the beginning of the year, glimpses that this offensive line, when everybody's working together and playing well, can be one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. But there were breakdowns late in the year, and you saw a couple of those breakdowns come back and haunt them during the playoffs.
Now, do you see anything coming up with the Lions, just like every NFL team, have had to deal with the concussion issues? How does that affecting the Lions? We know Javid Best has had it for years, but are a lot of Lions affected with that, or just a few guys affected by the concussion issue?
Just a few guys, but you hit on the one key guy who's important that's been affected by the concussion issue, and that's Javid Best. He still hasn't been cleared yet to do hitting in practices. The GM, Martin Mayhew, talked about that earlier this month, saying that he expects the doctors to clear Best to get contact for contact next month when the Lions hold their big voluntary minicamp where all the players, veterans and rookies, will be. If Javid Best can get back on the field and can be hit at that point, that's a good sign for him going into training camp. But he's the key. They've got to be able to keep him from getting concussed anymore. But you're right. Concussions, for the most part, a big issue in the NFL, but for the Lions, outside of Javid Best, it's not. It hasn't really affected them a whole lot.
Okay, that's good. Now, what about the receiving corps? We know the receiving corps is one of the best. They signed Ryan Broz. If he gets healthy, that could be a plus. They got the kid from Houston, who was their leading receiver for the last few years. Mm-hmm. Just signed the kid from North Carolina A&T. The Lions are really making strides to have one of the best receiving corps around.
Yeah, they really are. And here's the thing about, and a lot of people were puzzled by the drafting of Ryan Broz, and I can understand, especially with the questions that they have on defense. But last year when the Lions went to a 4 wide receiver set, it was basically 3 wide receivers, Calvin Johnson, Nate Burleson, Titus Young, and usually Tony Scheffler, the tight end. With Ryan Broz healthy, they can now actually field 4 NFL-quality wide receivers out there in a 4 wide receiver package. You mentioned the kid from Houston, Earl, Patrick Edwards. He was outstanding during the 3-day rookie minicamp that just concluded last week in Allen Park. He was terrific. He caught everything thrown his way. And it's no surprise that he's caught the eye of coaches and he's caught the eye of several media people. Can he turn that into a roster spot? Well, that remains to be seen. If he can keep this up during training camp, though, it's going to be hard for him to be kept off that final 53-man opening day roster.
Yes. What about the other player they recently signed from North Carolina A&T?
Wallace Miles?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a guy who also caught the attention of quite a few people during the rookie minicamp. And again, if he can continue his process, he can also make the 53-man roster. I think Edwards and Miles, their paths are a little tougher than Ryan Broz. Obviously, there's a lot expected from Broz when you're a second-round pick. You don't necessarily have the team completely made, but you have a better shot of making the team than a couple of undrafted free agents. The key, though, for Edwards and for Miles is also going to be their special teams play. The Lions are going to give them chances to make plays, be gunners on special teams. If they can excel on special teams and excel during the training camp and during preseason, that should help them in their quest to get a roster spot.
Okay. Tony, how did those cornerbacks look? I know they drafted a few quarterbacks, picked up a few. Mm-hmm. How did the new quarterbacks look? Do you think they'll be able to contribute?
You know what? A little bit too early to tell, Earl, because mm-hmm. there was no contact in this minicamp. And for the most part, there was some 7-on-7. But it's hard to tell until you get a full training camp and until you see these guys go day in and day out. But the quarterbacks, the two of note, Kellen Moore is the kid from Boise State, and he's the underdog. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about his arm strength not being up to a typical NFL-caliber quarterback. But especially on the last day, of the rookie minicamp. He looked good. R.J. Archer is a kid currently, Earl, who's playing in the Arena Football League, so he was a little bit more ahead of Kellen Moore during this rookie minicamp. But again, until training camp happens, you really won't get a gauge on how this quarterback battle is going. And Earl, Jim Schwartz kind of opened up the door a little bit when he said that the Lions aren't necessarily married to the idea of taking three quarterbacks with them at the start of the season. Now, they've done that in the past. Obviously, Drew Stanton was the third quarterback. But as Jim Schwartz pointed out, it's going to be the best 53 players on the roster come opening day. Now, whether that means there's three quarterbacks or whether it means there's two quarterbacks, that's what competition in training camp and in preseason is going to be there for. Wouldn't shock me at all, Earl, if they only started the season with two quarterbacks in Matthew Stafford and Sean Hill.
Yes, I mean, yeah, he has to get the best 53. You know, we always hear that from coaches. We want the best 53 guys there, you know, on the roster, whether that's two quarterbacks or three quarterbacks. I'm like you. I don't think it makes that big of a difference. You know, if you have injuries, then, of course, it can be a problem. But other than that, and you can't plan for injuries, even though we know you're going to have them during the year.
Absolutely. And look, if Matthew Stafford's healthy, he's the no doubt about it number one quarterback, and he's going to take as many snaps as humanly possible. The good thing, though, is Sean Hill is a veteran who has been in this situation before, backing up a young quarterback. He did it the last couple of years here in Detroit, did it behind Alex Smith in San Francisco. So he knows what that role of being the number two quarterback and, in a sense, being the veteran mentor takes. So he's pretty good in that role right now, Earl. So taking two quarterbacks is not a big deal for this Lions team. It might be in the past that they had a less experienced number two quarterback, but with Sean Hill there, even if they take two, I don't think it's a huge issue or huge deal for the Lions.
Yeah, how did Kellen Moore look during that training camp? Did he throw right, or did he make all the throws that he needed to make? How did Kellen Moore look?
He struggled the first couple of days, Earl. There were some throws he made that looked really good, and there were some, especially in the first 2 days of the rookie minicamp, where the passes were off target, and you kind of thought, okay, maybe it's a little bit of nerves, or maybe he doesn't have the arm strength. But by the third day of the minicamp, it seemed to click for him, and he threw the ball a lot better. That's why I'm very curious to see what this guy does next month when it's the full voluntary minicamp with the veterans and rookies and also going in the training camp. Is he the type of guy who gets better the more he practices, or is he the type of guy who will be limited by basically his limitations with his arms and with the fact that he played at Boise State? Will that be a problem for this kid? I want to see what he does during training camp, though, because he's one of those players that I'm definitely going to keep my eye on, because he might make a late push to be one of the final 53 on this roster.
Yeah, that would be, especially for him, that would give him a shot. You know, he would have to think that in the future he'd have a long run to be a starting quarterback in the future if he can make that 53-man roster, maybe in a couple of years.
Maybe in a couple of years, but it would not shock me also if Kellen Moore, Earl, ended up a practice squad player, at least for the first season for the Lions. Give him a chance to digest Scott Linehan's offense. Give him a chance to learn to play, maybe get used to the NFL life and kind of get that under his belt. Again, good quarterback, won 50 games at Boise State during his four-year career. But again, the type of guy who there are some definite questions about him. So third quarterback wouldn't surprise me. Ending up on the practice squad wouldn't surprise me. Him getting cut completely wouldn't surprise me. At this point, everything is wide open.
Hey, Tony, now how do you see the practice squad coming out? Because they look like they could start doing like Green Bay. Green Bay is, you know, they've kept a lot of their practice squad players, brought them up in the league, and they did a good – the Green Bay's done a good job. Do you see the Tigers – I mean, the Lions maybe doing a similar things as for the practice squad like Green Bay's doing?
Yeah, I see some of the practice squad players who were on there last year, Earl, getting a shot to earn roster spots this year. Wouldn't surprise me if a lot of those players stayed on the practice squad for the upcoming season. But, again, the key here is going to be how those players do in this upcoming minicamp and how those players do in training camp. If the Lions see some progress with those players and think that they're usable in upcoming years, then they will definitely stick them on the practice squad. But there's a couple of bodies on the practice squad, especially a wide receiver, that will definitely get a good look over both during minicamp and during training camp.
Give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. We're talking with Tony Ortiz with us this afternoon, talking Detroit Lions football. The Lions are getting ready for their second, hopefully another winning season. And it's hard to imagine, you know, we're talking about the Lions having a winning season after we went through all those bad years, Tony.
You know what? It's kind of funny because last year, in a sense, was kind of like one of those points where you shook your head and you thought, okay, this is all going to, at some point, maybe it'll all fall apart. Maybe we're dreaming. But they turned out to be a team that was better than advertised. And it paid off this year, Earl, because if you look at the schedule, the Lions, besides the annual Thanksgiving Day game, have four other appearances in prime time, three of them on the road, a fourth one here at home. But it's amazing how the NFL world and the attention of football fans all around the nation have now turned towards the Lions in just basically 1.5 short years.
Hopefully you don't believe in that jinx, do you, with Calvin Johnson getting on the cover of Madden 13. I don't believe in a jinx, but I know a lot of people do believe in the jinx. So
I know a lot of people who do too, but you know what, Earl? I don't believe in jinxes or curses, and you know what? Neither does Calvin. He was asked about that a couple of weeks ago when the voting was just about to conclude, and Calvin was like, no, I don't believe in jinxes. I don't believe in curses. And you know what? Players get hurt in the NFL.
Yep.
It happens. And the fact that it's happened to so many of these athletes on the Madden cover is just a way of life in the NFL. It's not necessarily a curse connected to that cover, although I might have to eat my words if something does happen to Calvin at some point during the season, but he's one of the better conditioned athletes in the NFL. I'm doubting here that he's going to run into any kind of an injury problem this year.
Yes, now, he has become maybe the best receiver in the league. Aside, you know, we've heard about the kid in Arizona being one of the better ones, Larry Fitzgerald and the Atlanta Roddy White being one. Mm-hmm. It looks like Calvin has surpassed all of them. Would you say he's the number one receiver right now, or two or three, when you look at all the receivers in the National Football League?
You know what? I'd say he's neck and neck with Larry Fitzgerald. The only difference between Fitzgerald and Calvin Johnson, in my opinion, what might give Fitzgerald, Earl, a little bit of an edge is the fact that he's been in the league a little bit longer and he's been able to do it. And keep in mind, Larry Fitzgerald was also able to show his talents on the biggest stage in the NFL, and that was the Super Bowl a few years ago when Arizona took on Pittsburgh. But otherwise than that, I think Calvin's the equal or better in some parts than Larry Fitzgerald. And I think this is a year. Last year was a breakout year for Calvin where people really stood up and took notice. If he can repeat that this year, I don't think there'd be any question whatsoever that Calvin Johnson may be the premier receiver in the NFL.
Okay. Hey, how is that cornerback who's coming from Albion doing? Man, he sure has blazing speed. How is he looking? Do you think he's going to make the squad?
You know what? He's got an uphill fight. Chris Greenwood is the kid you're talking about from Albion.
Yeah.
The key for him, just like we talked about with the wide receivers earlier, Earl, is going to be his play on special teams. I don't think he's going to be able to crack the starting lineup. I think they're pretty comfortable with at least Chris Houston starting, and I know they're going to give Aaron Berry a pretty good chance to earn a starting spot at the other corner position. I know the Lions front office especially likes him a great deal. But Greenwood's play on special teams and the way he does in training camp will go a long way towards determining whether he's on the 53-man roster come opening day or whether he starts the year as a practice squad player. But you're right. The one thing that stands out immediately about Chris Greenwood is he is a fast player. The other thing that stands out about him, he is a physical specimen. He looks like an NFL quarterback or cornerback, excuse me. The key is going to be, can he play like an NFL cornerback? And he even admitted after the rookie minicamp, his head was swimming a little bit. There's a lot to digest and a lot to take in, but he seems like a pretty bright kid, Earl, and I think he's going to be able to adjust to life in the NFL.
Okay, that sounds good, Tony. Hey, there's one thing we haven't talked about, but it seems like the NFL is starting to devalue kick returns and punt returns. Mm-hmm. How do you see that falling out for the Lions, is getting a good quality kick return? I think that was one of the areas that it didn't perform too well last year.
Yeah, Stephon Logan had his struggles at times returning kicks for the Lions last year. He's going to get a lot of competition this year. They're going to try quite a few players. You might see Ryan Broyles back there possibly returning kicks. I think Chris Greenwood might get a shot at returning kicks at some point. Again, you're right. The NFL has started to devalue the kick return, but it still is an important part of the game, especially punt returns, because that can really turn field position around. So while the NFL may be devaluing it, the Lions aren't. The Lions are a team that values having a solid kick returner back there, and Stephon Logan will get some competition. So the question with him is, will he be able to pick up his game and earn a spot on the roster? That remains to be seen from training camp, but he definitely will have a lot of competition from some of the rookies and maybe even some people they bring in a little bit later on before the start of training camp who might be trying to snatch that kick returner job away from Stephon Logan.
Okay. Hey, Tony, I want to thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We're going to have you on again soon. I know we haven't talked a lot over the summer, so we'll talk right, especially when we get close to training camp.
You got it, Earl. Anytime you need me, just give me a call, man.
Okie dokie. Hey, talk to you later, Tony.
Yep. You got it.
Bye-bye. And that's Tony Ortiz, the sideline reporter for the Detroit Lions. Give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Hello, this is Neil Conan. Thanks for being a loyal Talk of the Nation listener, but we know that you also love to talk. To yak, discuss, argue, gossip, to debate, explore, exchange, and converse. Find out what everyone's listening to and talking about. Join us to contribute your 2 cents on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming your way today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather. Today will be sunny and our high will be 67 degrees. Mostly clear with a low in the low 40s tonight. Thursday will be mostly sunny with a high reaching the low 70s. And looking ahead to Friday, mostly cloudy with a high of 78.
And give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527, toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. And who better to talk about the NBA playoffs with our good friend George Blaha for the voice of the Detroit Pistons. And let's bring in George. George, how you doing?
Earl, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing good. George, boy, I've been looking at these playoffs, and it seems like they're taking some strange turns. They might not be as people have, you know, as thought they would be. I mean, Indiana seems like they have a serious chance of beating upending Miami with the big guy going down.
Sure.
And then, of course, Philadelphia is giving a very strong push to Boston, who's, you know, at the end of their leg. We know that team is going to be broken up after this year, and they could Philadelphia might get beat Boston. And then the other side, San Antonio looks strong. They'll probably take out the Clippers. But, boy, L.A. and Oklahoma City, that could be a barn burner all the way till Game 7.
Well, I agree with you in most cases. I'm not so sure the Celtics will be broken up.
Yeah.
You know, I think you've got those guys. You might as well keep them and win until they're ready to retire, because Rondo breathes new life into them. They got Avery Bradley now, who's doing a very nice job, gives them a little push in the backcourt. So, and they got Doc Rivers, who I think is still one of the league's very best coaches. But Philly, I mean, when you're up against Doug Collins, you're not going to have any coaching advantage.
Right.
I mean, this guy's brilliant. So the best you can hope for when you coach against Doug is to get a draw. So then it comes down to how your team's playing. And you know, when you get some rest, I think the older legs tend to probably be okay. But I think in the end, if you're just as good and you have younger legs, you'll win the series. So Philly's a little younger. And in most cases, if they feel like they match up, get a push in the matchup, then they probably feel like they can win the series. And they had a chance to win both those games in Boston. And now it'll go back to Philly, and we'll see what happens. But I think that's a very interesting series, and I'm going to be tuned into that one without question. The Miami Heat, that's a big blow to lose Chris Bosh. And Indiana's a team that just, they're young. I think they're playing with house money, Earl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not worried about how the game's going to turn out. They're just playing.
Yep.
And sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it makes them more dangerous.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a team that could upset the Heat. And frankly, Miami doesn't have a lot of good players beyond the big three.
Yes.
I think it was a great acquisition to get Shane Battier. Excellent defender and a glue guy who doesn't want to do anything but win. It's never been about Shane as far as Shane Battier is concerned. Back to his days at Country Day, it's always been about team. So he's a great guy to have on your squad. But on balance, I think if they want to become a legitimate NBA powerhouse in the future, they might need to add another player or two, despite the fact that they have the big three. So, Ken, that's my take on the East. I think the Bulls, if Derrick Rose had been healthy, would have been my pick to come out of the East. But when he went down, and then when Joakim Noah went down, that was the end of Chicago.
Yes, a very, very disappointing end. And now we're looking at maybe a similar situation with Oakland, with Oklahoma City, and the Lakers. The Lakers still look strong, even though, you know, with Kobe getting up to in his age. But that young Oklahoma City team, boy, that's really a tough team. And they were eliminated a couple of years ago by the Lakers. And it seems like they're coming this series that they're going to beat the Lakers this time around.
I believe OKC wins that series. Mm-hmm. I think the Lakers are in big trouble against that team. Again, young legs, and man, can they score. And Scott Brooks has done a heck of a job coaching that team. He did win Coach of the Year a couple of years ago, but on balance, he's under the radar as a coach. And they're very dangerous. I would have said earlier it's between OKC and the Spurs to come out of the West, and I still think that's how the Western Finals will be. And at that point, I mean, that's going to be a perfect test of the young team with all the talent and a great group of grizzled veterans, expertly coached by Greg Popovich, if it comes down to that, and I think it will.
Yes, I look at the San Antonio Spurs, and you're right, that's a great team of chiseled veterans. How do you think he's been able to keep them relevant over all these years? I mean, they've been a playoff team, seems like forever, and yet they've been a good competitive team. What do you think is Pop's secret to getting this team ready every year?
Well, I think he's... if you look at the record, you'd have a hard time saying that anybody other than Greg Popovich is the best coach in the league. I mean, there's some guys in the argument. We mentioned a couple of them a moment ago in Doc Rivers and Doug Collins. But this guy, in terms of longevity, I mean, he doesn't wear out his welcome with his team. He continues to look for ways to make his team better, and yet he continues to get the most out of the older guys that anybody could. I mean, he rested his team throughout the season. They peaked at the right time. I don't think there's anything he doesn't know about NBA basketball. And, you know, the guy has complete control. Mm-hmm. There's no Danny Ainge in the front office pulling a string that maybe Pop doesn't want pulled, like Doc has to deal with. And I'm not saying Doc and Danny are not on the same page. They probably are. But it's still better if you are the boss.
Yes.
If you're a guy like Pop. So nothing goes on in San Antonio that Coach Popovich doesn't want to have happen. And that makes a big difference.
Yes. Now, we've heard these rumors about Magic let him off, that Mike Brown might be fired if they had lost that last series. Do you think Mike Brown is in any trouble? I mean, he's got a 4-year, 5-year contract. It's hard to believe that they get rid of him after the first year of having to change everything around in L.A.
Well, I think what helped him is he did beat Denver. That would have been very difficult for everybody out there to deal with, especially with the Clippers moving on. But here's the good news for Mike Brown is, yeah, they're going to get beat by Oklahoma City, but the Clippers might not win a game against the Spurs.
Yeah, that's true.
So the Clippers are going down in this round, and you know, that'll make it sit a lot easier with the powers that be over in the front office with the Lakers. Yeah. I think both those teams are going out this round. And, you know, when you have Andrew Bynum, you have a future. And Kobe's still Kobe. So I don't think there'll be a great groundswell to get rid of Mike Brown. I know that if he'd gone down in round one, there might have been, but I don't think there will be if he goes down in round two. I think OKC could win it all. And if they do, then what do you say?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because OKC is such a very good team, and they're still a young team. They could be strong for years to come. They might be the team that Wade said or LeBron said can win 6 or 7. It might not be them. It might not be Miami, but it just could be Oakland.
Yeah, somebody could win all those titles. Now, the team that I was pulling for was Memphis.
Yeah, me too.
I felt bad that Zach didn't have the kind of game he'd like to have in Game 7, but I thought Lionel Hollins did as good a coaching job as anybody in the league this year, and that team really played defense, and they survived the loss of Zach for much of the year. And in the end, maybe it was too much Chris Paul. I don't know. I think giving back that game one when they had a 27-point lead probably was their undoing.
Yeah, it broke their back.
They win that game, they probably win that series.
Oh, without a doubt, I think that would have
happened. And I think they would have had a better series. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I might be all wet about the Clippers, but I think they'd have had a better series against San Antonio than the Clippers will have.
Hey, now what about Phil Jackson? Do you see Phil getting another job, or he says he wants to come back? I guess that's what we've been reading. Do you see Phil getting back into the league? Does he want to get back at New York, or would he take any job? I can't see him taking any job.
Well, I can't either. He's always been able to pick and choose.
Yes.
And no disrespect to Phil, he always wins. Mm-hmm. But he's always had, in many people's opinion, the best player in the league on his side. First it was Michael in Chicago, and then it was Kobe in L.A. And I can't see him. He's not going to come back and coach a team that's 500.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to be a team that's ready to win. And does he really think the Knicks are ready to win, or does he love the Knicks because he played there enough to go back and try to take that team and take them somewhere? You're going to get a lot of accolades if you do win in New York, so maybe that would be tempting to him. Yeah. I'm not sure.
George, I look at the Knicks, and we've seen Jeremy Lin, and I don't think we've seen enough of him to make a definitive choice. But what do you think about Lin in his future? Do you see him being a point guard, or do they have to get someone else? Because he still turns it over quite a bit.
Well, I think the jury's still out, and it's hard to imagine the jury being still out with the kind of numbers that he put up during his run.
Yeah.
But there are people who say, hey, this kid is an excellent backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good basketball people, they're saying it off the record because nobody wants to burst the bubble out here.
Yeah.
As for me, I'm still not sure. I think if he could harness the turnovers, I think he would be a very acceptable point guard. Can he play with Carmelo when they were really moving the ball around and they were an equal opportunity offense? He was at his best.
Yeah.
Carmelo is, when he's on the floor, it's not an equal opportunity offense.
Right.
You're not going to get whoever has the best shot, the shot.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to try to get Carmelo the shot, and if he doesn't have a shot, then somebody else gets a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, when the ball gets to Carmelo, he keeps it for a while.
Yes,
but the ball doesn't move as well. So if, for instance, if Phil Jackson goes to New York, he's going to have to figure all of that out.
Mm-hmm.
And will Carmelo be able to function in Phil's favorite offense, the triangle? We'd have to figure that out too.
Yes, that would be a big challenge for him if he gets that job or some job. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Phil Jackson. Does he get a job in the league, or is he one of those who be from on the outside looking in? It's sort of hard for me to believe that Phil really wanted to coach again and get back. He's had health issues, and they say he's healthy now, and that's why he's wants to get back in the league. But still, it seems strange that Phil Jackson would want to coach again, and especially with the dollars that he's going to command. I think a lot of teams are going to shy away from that just because they figure they'll have to pay him an extraordinary amount of money to coach again.
Correct. And I'll tell you something else, just as an aside, Mike Woodson's a very good basketball
yes.
coach. The guy is in New York right now. So in many ways, they'd be crazy to move Mike Woodson, no matter who they could get to come in there.
Oh, for, without a doubt. Hey, when we look at the draft coming up, do you see our man Draymond Green going in? I mean, he thinks he's going to go in the between 20 and 30. You know, we see the Detroit, the Pistons will probably have be picking 9th, 10th, or 11th. Any chance he could get up that high, or do you see Draymond basically just going, like he says, between 20 and 30?
Well, you know, it's amazing how close those guys are when they give a player their projected draft position in the NBA. So I would say that most teams would look at Draymond as somebody who would go between 20 and 30. But that doesn't mean every team would.
Right.
I mean, this guy has special qualities. He's a leader. He's a basketball player. He doesn't necessarily have the kind of game that you can pigeonhole and say he's a power forward, he's a small forward. He's just a basketball player. And I think if you're really blown away by his leadership and his guts and his creativity on the floor, then you might take him sooner than that. And I wouldn't be surprised if Draymond was picked between 10 and 15 in the draft. I think there are people who like him that much, but when they go to pick, there might be somebody else they like who's still available. So that could push his stock down a little bit. But let me put it this way. I'd be more than a little bit surprised if he didn't go in round one. I think he's a surefire first-round draft choice.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and that's for sure. He's improved. You know, we say when coming out of college, you need to do one thing really well. Well, he improved his rebounding. He's really a very good rebounder at his size, 6'6", 6'7". He's become a very good rebounder, and I think that he can help any club coming off the bench, giving a few boards, and he can score well enough. Like you say, he's a very good basketball player, a good passer as well. He'd be a tremendous asset to any team coming off the bench or even maybe getting a starting role, but
sure.
I think he would be a very good player for any team.
Exactly. And the question is he big enough to guard power forwards? Is he quick enough to guard small forwards? But a long, long time ago, Red Holzman said, when somebody asked him about Bill Bradley, he said, well, gee, could he guard the small forwards in this league? And Red Holzman just said, well, let me ask you this, can they guard him?
Yep.
So that we got to look at it that way, too, in the case of Draymond.
Yep. Hey, George, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and we'll call you back probably one more time before the playoffs end, maybe when they get around the finals, and talk about the finals matchup.
All right. I look forward to it.
Okay. Thanks a lot, George.
All right, Earl. Keep up the great work.
Okay. Thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye. And that's George Blaha, the voice of the Detroit Pistons, and talking about the NBA playoffs, which are getting better and better. I must admit, the playoffs have gotten very strong and gotten very good over this year, and this could be a very, very good out playoffs, and that Indiana a Miami series should be a very good one. The Philly and New York and Boston, that is, can be a strong series. San Antonio and the Clippers, that has a chance to win one or two. I'm not sure if they'll win too many games, but maybe they'll win one or two games. And then you've got the last one, Oklahoma City and the Lakers should be a good one as well. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening and thank you all for calling. We'll invite you to come back and join us tomorrow here on AM 870. If you've never given us a call before, we want you to give us a call and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Come back and join us tomorrow. Make sure that you have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.